Welcome to the Title League Podcast. My name is Trish.
And I'm KB. And today we're talking about grassroots basketball in Canada, the evolution of the game, how much it's changed, not just over the entirety, but more importantly, how much has changed in the last 20 years. Youth in Canada have paths that never existed before. So I'm pretty excited. We've got a great guest on in Tariq Spiat from North Pole Hoops and from the National Preparatory Association. So enjoy our conversation. He'll be joining later on.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting. You say that it's changed in the last 20 years. So when I was a kid, and I'm a little bit older than you, when I was a kid, you know, you play basketball in high school, maybe you get looked at by a recruiter for an American university. Like, the road to the NBA, especially in Nova Scotia, was pretty limited in how you could get exposure or how you could see somebody or if anybody was ever going to see you and want to see you play. And a lot of kids would go to the States and play high school basketball in the States so that they could be seen. I never even heard of what a prep school was, like for any sport, forget about basketball, until I met you. And you told me that you went to IMG and you explained what IMG was. And then from that, it feels like there's lots of instances where I'm learning more about prep schools. There's more prep schools starting up in Canada. We have a fantastic prep school for basketball here in Nova Scotia. It's really interesting that, you know, you go from me being in high school, fast forward a few years later, you're here in Canada, you're going into high school, and you have this opportunity to go to IMG Academy and, you know, learn and train with some of the best that are out there across sports.
Yeah, you know, it's changed a lot. I was in high school in the mid-2000s, which is crazy because time flies and I'm getting older. But when I was in high school, it was you would dream about playing basketball in the U.S. We all knew that if you wanted to play pro, just like many of us who are playing competitively, we want to play in the NBA. That's what we dream about. You want to play at the highest level, and that's to play NCAA Division I basketball in the U.S. So when you're in a high school in Canada, that was something that wasn't really attainable. It was really difficult. So prep schools started to pave the way for that. And the most logical way to get there would be go to a prep school in the U.S. They weren't Canadian prep schools. So I left after my senior year of high school. I reclassified for one more year of eligibility to be a high school senior, and I went to a prep school in Florida, IMG Academy. And even though I'm not playing pro basketball today, I would say that IMG was one of the greatest learning experiences that I've had in my life.
I don't know. I see you play on the hoop outside of my house. You look pretty talented out there. You're the reigning champ of the sloped driveway hoops.
Yeah. You know, when you play anything, there's muscle memory. So no matter how old you get, vets still got it. You know, I might not be as agile and as crafty as I used to be, but it's all in the head. And when I play these young guns, I still teach them a lesson.
So we have Tariq on today, and he's the head of the NPA. I'm sure he's going to come on and talk about this and explain how they got started. But what's your opinion on how these prep schools and the formation of the NPA and North Pole Hoops have elevated basketball? So from an unbiased perspective of just a fan who's Canadian, what are your thoughts on that?
It changes a lot. It provides a lot of opportunities. I think about all the guys that came before me and the guys that came up during my time. We've paved the way. I mean, you go back to Steve Nash going to school in Santa Clara. He was one of the first people to really to go ahead and do it and make a name for it, have a long career, win MVP, you know, two MVPs. And then after that, there's been the Joseph brothers out of Pickering, DeVoe and Corey. And Corey's has had a great, great career in the NBA, and his brother DeVoe still playing pro. And all of the guys that have come through and paved the way for today's youth. So when you look at these prep schools, there's been a lot of work cumulatively there's been a lot of work that's had to go into making it happen.
But have those guys gone to prep schools in Canada, or have they gone to prep schools in the States?
They've gone to prep schools in the U.S., but my point is all of that had to happen in order for prep schools in Canada to be created. Right. We had to see that our athletes were going south of the border. There needed to be an organization. There needed to be Tariq and Elias to create MPH, to create NPA, so that we have platforms, we have institutions here in Canada where athletes don't have to go south. They can stay at home, play, and get recognized for their skills and ability.
I find it interesting. So for me, sports has always been a passion. I love sports, but it's never been the primary passion. So I've always been more artistic, music and writing and theater, and sports has come second. And when I see those two cultures or those cultures colliding, I wonder how much of an influence they have on each other. So to me, I think that we've always had a strong love of basketball as a country. Now, when people think of Canada, they think hockey. Hockey's the obvious, the go-to, even though more kids play soccer than any other sport in Canada. Lacrosse is our national sport. So somewhere in the mix, there is basketball. But basketball, lots of kids play basketball. Lots of kids are into basketball.
Most participated sport, actually, right now.
So, but okay, so right now. So I wonder how much of that is from artistic influence. So, I'm talking about Drake and you need to have a good basketball team. You need to have a good basketball team to elicit fans. But do you think that it's the power of music and creative arts that have now meshed with, and Drake's the most popular, but there's so many artists that love basketball, love the Raptors, particularly in Canada. Do you think that that has been what has pushed basketball over the edge in popularity over the last, 6-7 years?
I think it's a no-brainer. If you look at hip-hop, R&B, there is so much synergy between hip-hop culture and basketball. The synergies, the crossover. Rappers want to play basketball. Basketball players want to be rappers.
Right.
As you've seen the growth of hip-hop, especially since the 90s, you've seen the growth of basketball.
Yeah.
So as the two have grown, they've complemented each other really well. You take Drake, he's an icon, he's globally recognized, he's the ambassador for the Toronto Raptors. Pair that with the impressive play of the Raptors and winning a championship. I mean, of course basketball is going to be the most participated sport in the country today. Everybody wants to hoop. Everybody wants a hoop in their driveway. They want a pair of kicks. Now with The Last Dance coming out, every kid wants to wear a pair of Jordans again. So the love of the game is there. It's accessible. It's easy to play. Yeah, that's all contributed.
There are timelines, though, and not to take away from any of the amazing hip-hop that came out of Canadian artists in the 80s and early 90s. When I was a kid in the late 90s, the West Coast, East Coast rivalry in hip-hop of the United States, not Canada, we wanted to be, we listened to American rappers, and we wanted to play for American teams, and the whole notion of being Canadian never played into it. There was never, even though the Raptors existed and were solid in those first few years, it was not an option. They were not our team. So then you fast forward now, 20 years later, and I think that Canadian kids, because of Canadian basketball players and because of Canadian artists, they can see themselves as this being really something that they could strive for. It's not something that is just meant for kids who are growing up in the United States. And I think that that has to do equally with artists like Drake that have been elevated into a spotlight. I mean, Canadian music is at an all-time high. I don't remember the last time we've had so much international success from musicians in all genres as we do right now, or as we have in the last 10 years. So I think for me, when you can see yourself as it being a possibility and not just this pipe dream of maybe I could be something if I lived in the States.
I think also as a country, we've changed. 20 years is not a long time, but in the 18 years that I've lived here, what is a Canadian? Our population has grown. We've had a massive influx of immigration. When you look at what a Canadian is today, it's really a melting pot.
Yeah.
We are so many ethnicities and cultures intertwined into one. It's hard to go back. I mean, yeah, hockey is big, but is hockey still big? Our country has changed.
Hockey's still big. And I would argue with you that we've been a melting pot for a lot longer than 18, 20 years. But I will give you that. I think that the way that the world has changed and the way that Canada has changed from a technology, from a social media, from a connectivity point of view makes it a lot different. Yeah, because, you know, anybody, we're seeing that you don't have to be in Toronto. You don't have to be in LA, you don't have to be in New York in order to make it. People all over the world in small little towns are making it. The advent of, God, we're so off topic, but the advent of reality TV, you know, like the American Idol and America's Next Top Model and Big Brother and Survivor and all of these reality game shows where you're coming from the middle of nowhere, Canada, US, and you can catapult yourself into infamy, shows that you're really no longer limited. We don't exist in a world where, I mean, as long as you can get a telephone signal or you have some sort of internet connection, you can be discovered or you can be seen. So I think that that also probably has made a difference in terms of, because again, like, it's not, nobody wants to just watch. Everybody watches, but you kind of daydream that that's you. That's you on the ice. That's you on the basketball court. That's you on the soccer field, right? That's you up on stage. You want to see yourself. You want to see it as a possibility. So you can make it as major as Canadians needing to see other Canadians do these things in order to believe that they can do it themselves. But it also could be anybody from a small town or a small place that doesn't think that they're ever going to be seen, realizing, wait a second, if that kid from that small place just got seen and just made it, then maybe it can be me.
Yeah, and we have more and more of those stories emerging every day. We've got kids coming out of Nova Scotia, where we're located. You know, we have a young upcoming talent that's going to be in the NBA draft in a few months that's going to be representing Nova Scotia. So very exciting. We've got kids coming from the smallest pockets and corners of Canada. So, you know, when you look at North Pole Hoops, you look at the National Preparatory Association, it's providing a pathway to the next level.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. You know, I mean, I love what we've been talking about, but hearing it straight from Tariq's mouth of why he started this up.
And all the obstacles he would have faced.
Right, right. Because do you know the year that this started? How long have we...
10 years. So North Pole Hoops been around 10 years and the NPA, which is the Preparatory Association, has been around for 4. Right. So they started creating and highlighting and providing exposure for Canadian youth almost 10 years ago.
So a lot would have changed from 2010 to today. Good and bad, I would think. It'll be interesting to hear what he has to say. And I think that we have him coming on the line now.
Perfect.
So Kurt had started by telling me that North Pole Hoop started about 10 years ago and the NPA started about 4 years ago. So let's go back 10 years. What made you create this database or this website that put a spotlight on Canadian basketball players with North Pole Hoops?
Yeah, so 2011, January of 2011 is when North Pole Hoops launched. And prior to that, started a publication, Crown Magazine. So that was the class of 2008. That was like Corey Joseph, Tristan Thompson, and that kind of class, which we kind of refer to now as the pioneers, so to speak, of guys that kind of started and the players to the NBA draft, because those two guys got drafted. There's been a Canadian ever since. So that's kind of how I got into the industry. But then launching of the North Pole Hoops has always been about exposure. Exposure for our talent, coast to coast, not just, you know, Toronto or greater Toronto area, but being able to provide scholarship opportunities for the amazing talent that we have. And each year, North Pole Hoops has kind of evolved in terms of what the organization is based on the market need, based on what people have been requesting over all these years.
And what you just said, Tariq, it's funny because before you jumped on, we were actually chatting about I was in high school playing at OFSA against Corey DeVoe, Alex Arthur, kind of the pioneers that came through, and I went to IMG Academy in the U.S., so I'm very familiar with the prep program, the prep circuit. When we were playing, there wasn't, you know, prep wasn't on the scene in Canada. We had to go south, and now so much has changed, so much has evolved. you know, our country has changed. It's not just a hockey country. We have programs here so that our talent doesn't have to run south. So when you started it to where it is today, I mean, did you have any inclination that it would grow to where it is? And more importantly, now that you have your own prep association, did you see any of this? Did you have any idea that this was going to be part of the growth and trajectory?
Yeah, I mean, parts of it, like there's always been a big macro vision to it. And the vision has evolved in terms of the prep league. I can't say that that was a part of the plan from day one. That evolved in terms of, again, market need, right? So you mentioned, you know, the Tristan Thompsons and the Corey Josephs, you know, you connect to Finlay Prep when it comes to that, those names. But then you've seen other American powerhouses form based on Canadian talent. So Huntington Prep, you know, Andrew Wiggins and the crew over there, St. Benedict's, Wasatch Academy. So there's all these prep, American prep programs. I'd be doing the same thing if I'm an American culture program, looking to recruit internationally and build my program. And then it just got to a point where, and it was kind of a bubbling thought process where we have top talent, we have top coaches. And it was, I always remember myself trying to communicate this to coaches in the community, where it's almost like we have this little brother syndrome to America. Mm-hmm. But then what we're now seeing is like, and this is something that I'm constantly communicating to the community, is we have world-class coaches. We have world-class talent. We have world-class industry leaders and a lot of things that we do, but you would never know if you're only operating in Canada. I've been fortunate enough to be able to do things all over the world and see the difference. So now you have a measuring stick, whereas oftentimes us Canadians kind of compare ourselves to each other. But not seeing that, hey, as that's growing, as the talent is developing, and not just basketball players, but the community, we're seeing stuff that isn't offered anywhere in the world. And that's something personally, like, you know, when you compare what we're doing on a global stage, you'll see it very clearly how our coaches are talented, our players are talented, they compete with the best of them.
I've been fortunate enough, you know, since 2017, we launched a project called Global Blueprint Basketball. So over the last 3 years or so, I've been on the phones with people in Asia, in Europe, you know, in Africa, daily, weekly. And that's where it really put things into perspective as to, you know, how highly revered Canada is. Like, when you think about it, Canada has currently active 22 NBA players from Canada. That's the most in the world outside of America.
That's why we got a chance to win next year in Tokyo.
God willing. And that's, you know, that means that Canada's in a leadership position globally when it comes to basketball. And so, but because not all, of course, we have many Canadians that have been able to travel, coaches and whatnot, travel the world and kind of see outside of Canada, but there's seems to be a local mindset, whether it be city local or country local. And because we're, at the end of the day, we're only 36 million people, right? So it's very easy to have that little brother syndrome or that little brother mindset to America, because that's who we're always being compared to. But we're being compared to the best in the world, you know what I mean? Constantly. I mean, if you talk about Canada versus America, 400 million versus 36 million. Yeah. You know, and just to give context, you know, in China, 100 million people play basketball in China.
Yeah, it's wild.
So, I think
we were talking about this earlier before you hopped on it, and I think the whole little brother syndrome kind of plays into it, because when you're a kid, when I was a kid, growing up in like the late 90s, there isn't a lot of people for me to look to for anything. Even though we have a great music scene, even though we have super talented athletes, the spotlight wasn't really being shone on them. So unless you know, so to me, growing up in Halifax, I'm thinking, unless I live in New York, unless I live in LA, I gotta look like them, I gotta be like them. That's the only way I'm gonna make it. Nobody's gonna look this way. And then over the last 20 years, that spotlight has grown, and now I think kids see themselves and see it as a possibility, and with prep programs see options that don't take them away from their homes or away from or competing with so many people, right? Like, and I think that that's something that's really changed, because you had to go from the outside of Canada to see how revered we were. And I think what's happening now is that we don't need to leave, and we're starting to see that we have what it takes in a lot of areas where we thought maybe we were kind of lacking. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, and so much so that, you know, something that, you know, I've told my staff, and, you know, it's a part of our vision right now, is to bring the world to Canada. And that's what we're doing. So if you look at the National Prep Association, we have programs all over the country, and we have kids from NBA prospects. I'm talking from Ivory Coast, from Tanzania in Africa, from Iran, Eastern Europe. There's kids from all over the world that are coming to Canada to pursue their NBA dreams, because there's a pathway there. And when you take a look at the countries like America, Canada, and this is away from basketball, this is socioeconomic, this is healthcare, this is, you know, living situation, multiculturalism. Canada's a really great country to live. So if there's an infrastructure there that can help kids get to the NBA, the NCAA, the next level, essentially, whatever that might be, and now we have the Pro League, you know, the CBL, now we have an opportunity to actually bring the world to Canada.
I agree.
And get world-class opportunity.
That's it's so much of that resonates with me. I immigrated to Canada when I was 13 from Zimbabwe. So I came from East Africa to Canada. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I arrived in Canada, a lot of the sports that I played in Africa, we didn't play in North America. So coming here, the first thing I picked up was a basketball. And
that's awesome.
You know, you pick up a basketball, you start playing, and that's become the sport that I love, and obviously the industry we're in. So when you talk about all of those bridges and pathways, it is 100% bringing the world to Canada. We have the infrastructure here. It is a very, very accommodating country to immigrate. It is got so much more to offer than you look at the U.S. Why would you want to move to the U.S. when you can move to Canada? So when you look at all of these different families that are looking for a place to immigrate, Canada is the choice, number one choice, more times than less, because of all of the infrastructure that's here. So now when you pair that with sport and what you guys have done, you've now created and instilled a platform that essentially dominates the Canadian landscape. If you want to find out about upcoming talent in this country, is there anyone else in the space that's doing it better than you guys?
It's like 10 years ago, there wasn't much out there. You know, like there was, from a scouting standpoint, shout out Barry Hayes, for example, part of the, you know, scouting before Northpole Hoops was there. And there were different groups, and there are more groups coming now, which is great. Like people didn't care about Canadian basketball 10 years ago. It wasn't relevant. It's still growing in terms of, like, locally at the youth sport level, for instance, or CCAA.
And I'm sure you guys have put a lot of pressure on youth sports to up their game.
Well, we have to challenge each other. That's the only way you grow, right? You got to challenge each other. And for me, it's like, and this is really important. Like, because I think it happens a lot in the industry side when it comes to competition. Like, are you competing internally or externally, right? Like, for me, I've never, like, my mindset is to compete internally, meaning to try to be the best version of myself from yesterday. And thus, same with our company, like, our people are trying to get better every day. Not externally, because when it's external, it becomes about everything else but growing the game and helping kids. It becomes about the ego. It becomes about competition and who's doing it better. And I just feel like from a growth standpoint, it's something that's worth for us, and I'll continue to do, is try to look internally and look at, okay, how can I be better? And really just have those honest conversations with the self, and then collectively. So, you know, that's why we ask you that question. I say, there's a lot of people doing great work, your company included. You guys are doing awesome work. And there's enough for everybody to eat, right? Because the industry is still forming. It's a baby, but it's growing. You know, it's rapidly growing and evolving. What it was a year ago, what it was 5 years ago, what it was 10 years ago, it's very different.
It's changed drastically.
And so, it's going to continue to change.
So when you look at the Canadian Basketball Commitment Corner on North Pole Hoops website, it's amazing to see the amount of talent that has received scholarship or opportunities to play at any level. So when you start to look at all of the youth that are having an opportunity to play in the US, in Canada. Do you think we will start to see Canadian athletes getting to the next level at the pro level straight out of a Canadian university? Or do you think it will continue to be, you got to go down south?
Well, there's I think there's a false narrative out there, and then we're trying to help with the communication and education part is coming out of Canadian university basketball, every year guys are going pro overseas, you know, in Europe and in Asia and so on. Brody Clark, University of Alberta, just signed a week ago in the first Pro A German League, right? It's one of the top leagues in the world. Now, if we're talking NBA, we've also, the last time we had an NBA player come out of U Sport was Will Njoku.
Yeah, out of SMU.
He was drafted right out of your neck of the woods, right? Nova Scotia. So in terms of can it happen again? Absolutely, it can happen again. We need exposure, more exposure opportunities. That's why we're now, you know, building that relationship with U Sport to provide more the same exposure we're providing on the high school level. We want to provide it to Canadian university, to Canadian college, because, you know, and this is, you know, when we talk marketing, when we talk production, like if you have a quality product, which we believe strongly that U Sport is a quality product, and you combine that with a quality marketing, you have a quality operation, meaning like the talent is there. The coaches are there, the players are there, but nobody knows about it. You know, and it's the same thing now. And this is what I love with what the CEBL is doing at the pro level. They're really understanding how to communicate their message and control their narrative and build their narrative and appreciate the talent. Because once the talent feels appreciated, the players and the coaches feel appreciated, they're a part of the growth. You know, so it's really on us as a basketball country to get it to the point. When you go to a university game, you go to a college game, it's a packed house regardless of the year, not just like Final Eight or whatnot. Like, it needs to get there, and it will get there. It's on its way, but we just gotta, you know, we gotta improve the aspect of you know, the storytelling, which I know you guys connect with, you know, in what you do.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of growth. I mean, you can't be happy with where we are because there's so much opportunity for us to be better as a country. But the progress is significant. And when you reflect on the progress, like you said, 1, 5, 10 years, it has been drastic. When you go to a Canadian university game, you should expect it to be filled. You shouldn't be showing up to Final Eight for it to be full. And those are some of the things that culturally will come over time. If the talent is there, if the product is there, people will show up and watch it. And that's what we need to put our athletes on that stage. You look at some of the talent coming out of Canada right now, Elijah Fisher. Obviously, you've got Nate Darling, who is going to be in the NBA draft coming up in a few months out of Nova Scotia. We've got kids at all different ages, different levels that are proving that Canadians belong at the highest level. And it's just very exciting to see what you guys have done. And I guess the perfect segue is when you look at the NPA, has grown a ton in 4 years. What do you guys see, and where do you see the NPA going to provide these opportunities?
Well, you know, when we launched in year one, I put this out, like, our goal is to be the best amateur basketball league in the world. And we feel that we're knocking on the door. Like, in when you compare it, you know, you look at the NEPSAC in the States, you look at the Catholic League, I believe, out of DC. And those are top leagues. You know, they have quality, we feel that the infrastructure there, we feel that the exposure, the live broadcasting from an operational standpoint, we're there, but we are now getting there from a talent standpoint. Like, we got the next Serge Ibaka in the NBA. We got the next Luka Doncic in the NBA coming from all over the world. And, you know, we have unbelievable talent in Canada, but now we need to bring more top dogs from all over the world. And that raises the competition even further. And that's where now and the goal is, like, in 1 year from now, a year and a half from now, you know, it becomes undeniable. You know, we want to make it undeniable that this is the place to be, as a country, as a sport, you know. And what happens when you bring these top players from all over the world, it forces our players to step up their game.
So there's a lot of crossover with, you know, North Pole Hoops and the NPA. You know, you guys work hand in hand with high schools, and there still are high school programs putting out great products. Then you look at the NPA, and the NPA is a fantastic product because you stream all the games. It is almost coast to coast. You've got 12 teams in there. at what point do we start to see high school athletic unions collaborating with the NPA so it is not just 12 teams in the NPA, but it is every single team participating in this league across the country?
Well, I think that we got to understand that there's levels, right? So, like, for instance, there's a place for traditional high school basketball. There always will be, right? But there, like, the NPA, it's to be honest, it's more about quality than it is about quantity, right? So we'll never have 100 teams in the league. That's never going to happen. But, you know, upside wise in Canada, we might be, you know, 24 or so, but the game needs to grow further. There has to be a more talent, larger talent pool locally. And we learned this through the years of doing the league. You know, it's really important that it's quality over quantity in our whole process, vetting process, you know, to ensure that the programs have the right stability and the right foundation long-term to be able to survive and not just survive, but thrive, right? So, but I think that in terms of the community, like the athletic associations, it's more about understanding, right? And understanding that there is a need these kids want. It's not for everybody, right? It's for the kids that are really trying to get to the next level in their sports and are not doing it recreationally. And there is a high demand for those players. Now, there are other players that will play recreationally and there is a place for them in the sport, but maybe might not be as a player. Maybe it might be as a scorekeeper, a salesperson, a marketing person, you know, whatever it may be, game operations. And so it's really important understanding the levels and understanding, like, appreciating the value that each entity brings to the table, because they're serving different purposes and they're serving different, I guess you call it, markets or landscapes, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So, and I guess that makes the most amount of sense. There will always be a place for high school basketball. The great thing about the NPA is you guys are open and agile. You can change on the flip of a coin, and you allow your teams to play, you know, out of league. So they can play, I believe, exhibition games against high schools. They can play exhibition games against the top prep schools in America, if I'm not correct, right?
I'm going to jump in, because I think that that's great that you can say that there's always a place for high school basketball, but you gotta play with high school basketball. There is a culture of, I don't want you to come in because I don't want you to take away from what I'm doing here. So whether that's provincial ball or high school, Nova Scotia Secondary Student Association is an athletic association is what I'm thinking of, but whatever the athletic associations for each province, like
governing bodies.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to be happy with a prep program coming in to my province and potentially taking away the stars that I have. And for me to be left with kids who are playing rec ball, or the feeling that the kids who are playing in my program are just playing rec ball. They're not of a different caliber. So, like, to me, that would be one of the biggest obstacles of changing that mindset and saying that there's a place for all of us and that we can work collaboratively. And I don't know what struggles you have come across in other provinces or if you've had them at all.
Yeah.
But, like, I come from an education background. I worked in high schools. Like, there is a territorial feeling our kids. And whether that's hockey, basketball, volleyball, whatever it is, whatever sport it is, I don't think any high school coach is going to want to feel like they are just getting the B team and that the prep schools are getting the quality talent from whatever pool it is, whether it's international students or local students. So I don't know what that dynamic has been like for you, but
yeah, it has been, like, especially in the beginning stage, an uphill battle. And it's particularly, like, in Ontario, I think it's now understood that the prep it's needed and it's valued. And I guess the message that I would send is, like, okay, why are we doing what we're doing? And we have a philosophy that we try to stand by all the time, which is you put the kids or people first, you put the game second, and the rest follows, like organizational goals, business goals, whatever the case may be. And one thing I know 100% certain is that the NPA is about the kids, and the high school federation or the high school coaches are also about the kids. And so that's where the conversation has to start, right? And every kid is different, right? Like, you look at the 12-person roster on a traditional high school team. Let's take a traditional high school team in Nova Scotia, whether it's an Auburn or a Citadel or so on and so forth. Like, we got a lot of great programs.
Halifax.
Um, Halifax West, of course, Halifax Grammar, you know, so on and so forth. But point being is that of those 12 players, how many are next level players realistically, right? So this is only for a certain level of player that is no longer like let's say they're dominating, he or she is dominating their high school basketball and they're just absolutely, you know, 20, 30 a game, whatever the case may be. What happens is you get to a point where you're not challenged anymore. And when you're not challenged anymore, you start to develop bad habits. But then once you get to a certain level, now it's like, okay, that's to me, that's who prep basketball is for. It's for the players that have reached a level where they're not being challenged anymore and now they need the next level. But before university. So what happens is the youth sport coaches, Canadian college coaches and D1 coaches, they love the NPA because it's preparing these kids so that the difference of being a freshman, an impact freshman versus a redshirt freshman or a guy that has to wait. And so it takes a community. It takes a village. We say it all the time. It takes a village to raise a child. And prep basketball is a part of that village. High school basketball is a part of that village. Elementary school is a part of that village. Club basketball, national team, right? Camps, whatever the case may be. It's about working together. And that's something I always try to say because it's not about the, it gets oftentimes to a point where it's no longer about the kids. It's about adults being able to work together.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's, if we can keep what's important, number one, which is the people or the kids. And then, and on a company level, like I've used this philosophy for staff, right? Like people first, on the basketball side, it's players first. And then you build off of that. So, you know, I think it's been pretty successful in terms of like, it's obviously we don't have everybody on board yet, but it's gradually changing through information and education and communication.
I just think too, and I mean, I agree with everything that you're saying. I agree with everything that you're saying, but I think that, you know, maybe this is just a Nova Scotia thing. I don't know, but I would say it's probably anywhere. It's one thing if it's one of your own who is starting this and saying, you know, you know me, you know how I am, you know that I put my kids first, you know that this is going to be like, we need this in order for them to grow. There's enough space for all of us. I think it's another thing if I had somebody coming in from out of province, out of country, out of wherever.
And starting it up.
Yeah, I think that there'd be a lot of challenges to that. I think that there is a culture that, thinks going back to your that you're right. I think that every high school coach or every any admin person, any grown up who is involved in high school life, whether it's sports, academics, puts the kids first. But I think there's also a way of thinking that only me is going to be putting the kids first, and that somebody coming in is going to have ulterior motives that isn't necessarily putting the kids first.
Here's what I'll say, because I'll use a very tangible example. So we've got Halifax Prep. We got Ming out in Nova Scotia, you know, and Halifax Prep is in the NPA. He's a 7-footer, so you can't miss him. He played professional basketball, played college, D1 college basketball. And to me, and this is just an example of everyone that we work with, like, he showed me he's about the kids, because Halifax Prep was born out of need, right? So originally it was supposed to be Colchester, and then things didn't work out. And he showed me, he stepped up. He showed me like he could have left it and then the kids would have lost opportunities. He stepped up and was able to provide something and is still building it. You know, it takes a long time to build something. And it takes a lot of sweat equity, financial, all sorts of investment into it. But I know that he's doing it for the kids. And when I found out, that's the integrity that he wants to, like, that's just an example, but that's where that built my confidence. And now all of us, whether we're talking about national governing bodies, we're talking about provincial governing bodies, we're talking North Pole Hoops, we're talking prep program, like, we all need to improve. We all need to be better. Do we make mistakes? 100%. We all make mistakes, but we want to improve. You know, communicate, hey, and having those tough conversations, because sometimes people don't want to have the conversation like that. Hey, I didn't like this, you know, and if we don't have the conversation, then it the improvement can never happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's interesting because I mean, at Halifax Prep, I know Ming. He's wonderful. He definitely puts the kids first. But his program was born out of a program that actually had some very unfortunate things attached to it. So you mentioned right. Colchester Prep, and there was a lot of negativity that surfaced around that, and there was a lot of stigma that. That obviously was attached to that particular prep school. And I'm sorry for the inside basketball talk on the podcast, but the Colchester Prep was a big deal in this province. And now you have Ming, who is trying to salvage the integrity of that program, has moved it to Halifax. And I'm curious, he is somebody who you can't miss. He is somebody who is not from Nova Scotia. What has his path been like? Has he had the buy-in, not from the kids, but from the adult bodies that govern the other kids that exist in Nova Scotia and that are playing basketball?
Oh, it's been growing. It's been growing each year. You're not going to win over everybody all in 1 year. It's progression. Same with us at North Pole Hoops. Like, you know, when we started, and it's been an uphill battle. It's been an uphill battle when you're bringing, you know, different type of thinking. And this is what I'll say, okay? There's the past, there's the present, and the future. In my view, kind of like put it all in kind of one vacuum, like we need to bring the past, the tradition, the rich tradition of people and history of people in the game. We need to bring the past with the present, meaning the current stakeholders, to create the future. And I see a massive disconnect between the past, meaning the people that have been traditionally in power and in influence, with the present stakeholders. And there's, again, an industry is growing. There's new people, new players in the game coming every year. So now it's like, if we don't bridge the gap here, and this is something that I've, even, you know, North Pole, we've struggled with, like, if we don't connect with the past and bring it to the present, we can't create the future. And both are important. You can't have one without the other. And so, like, valuing each other is where the conversation needs to begin. And this is like getting deep. We're probably right. deeper than I thought.
I think that what you're saying is 100% accurate. And I think that this actually, that philosophy has to be brought into everything that's happening in this world, because you have too much of what the past looks like, and the past is represented, and the past continues to have vested interest and continues to be represented. And you have all of us that are moving forward, and that we we're not a part of that system, or we're not working with that system, or we're trying to work in a system that goes alongside the past without ever mm-hmm. integrating the two together. So I think that there's like a big life lesson outside of basketball and prep programs sure, that can be learned from that too.
As long as, and the thing that is correct and stands true in all of it is, if the best interest is the interest of the youth, then that marriage can be successful.
Sure, but I'm going to tell 100%. You, I'm going to tell you, as somebody who has worked with adults who work with kids, what I think is in the best interest of kids is not necessarily what you think is in the best interest of kids. And people move forward, grown-ups move forward, thinking that they are doing what is in the best interest of kids, and it's not necessarily as clear-cut as what you would think.
But now the great thing is, what you guys have done at MPA is you've proven a model that's successful.
Right.
How many kids are getting scholarship opportunities?
Exactly.
How many kids are going D1 out of high schools? There's a hell of a lot more coming out of the prep program.
I just wanted to make the point that it is not as clear. It is not as easy as starting something up.
Absolutely. I mean, here's the thing, like 100% it's not easy, but it takes dialogue. It takes communication. Right. And I think I this might be, I've said this many times before, it might come off very like strong or like blunt or whatever, but it is really reality. Like, you evolve or you dissolve, right? If you can't evolve your mentality, if you can't change your mentality, you're going to fall behind. That's in any world, in any industry, in any walk of life. We have to change. We have to be open to change. And that's where I feel like in some cases, you know, when we talk about the past or the traditional powers that be, haven't shown, and it is changing now. I mean, the world's changing. So let's take, it's coronavirus and everything else that's happening on the racial side of things. Like, it's forcing people to change. You know, when we do digital, my phone is ringing off the hook with companies inside and outside of basketball for digital marketing services and opportunity, because they have to either close their companies or they're getting major hits financially if they're not evolving to the online world. That's just an example, right? Mm-hmm. You got to evolve or you will dissolve, you will lose track. And that's for, I think that's for all of us, right? Whether it's people or as an organization.
Exactly. That's evolution. If you don't evolve, you dissolve. So I'm with it. Moving forward, you guys have grown. There's been lots of obstacles. It takes time. It's taken 10 years to get to the level that you are. And there's so much more for you guys to grow. That's the beauty of it. When you look at the U.S., youth are ranked at ESPN. There's the McDonald's All-American game. There's obviously the NCAA. You guys have essentially become the ESPN of Canada when you look at youth basketball. Would that be a realistic, comparison?
I think so. I mean, in terms of like media and scouting and that type of thing, you know, they got ESPN, you got Rivals, you got Scout. And there's the component of our organization, which is the scouting department, that kind of fits that bill, you know, in terms of leading and in terms of the actual scouting component to it, for sure.
Because in America, if you're a great high school player, you're ranked. And in Canada, if you're a great player now, you're also going to be ranked, or you're going to be known about through North Pole Hoops. So when you look at the landscape, you guys have taken it and now you own that space. So what does the future look like for NPH, and what does the future look like for NPA? If you can kind of take us through what the next few years look like for those two brands.
Sure. Yeah. So like NPA, pretty simple. We want to be undeniably regarded as the best league in the world. And that will happen through the global initiatives that we have, the partnerships that we're building to essentially establish feeder systems from all over the world. So that's the NPA. And then when it comes to, you know, MPH, you know, it's a constant, again, evolution, sort of kind of, you know, hammer that point. But like right now, for instance, like we feel, we always look internally and say, okay, rankings. When we first started rankings, the benefit to it and what we thought was like inspired to kind of and connect the country together, because it's our national rankings include players from all over the world, from all over the country, in terms of like bridging that gap for the kid in BC or the kid in Alberta or the kid in Ontario, just to have an understanding of like, where do we kind of stack up? That was always the intention with inspiration and all that. And now we've, you know, a decade later, and we're looking at it like, we kind of play with a double-edged sword, because on one side, we want to provide exposure. We want to provide opportunity through, and rankings is one of the ways. But then there's also another area of the community that we're listening to. And they're saying that rankings are, and I completely see it. I've seen it over the years. And that's why we don't rank elementary school kids. It's way too young. It's straight high school. But even high school, it's like there's a psychological component to kids and rankings. And we've seen it where kids, you rank them and then the work ethic slows down. And then we've seen other kids that we've ranked early and they're just hungry, like Jamal Murray, right? Hungry, stayed hungry. RJ Barrett didn't care about the rankings, but it usually is composed with a good mentorship base. Like RJ had his dad, Rowan. Jamal had his dad, Roger, like keeping them grounded. And if you don't have that mentorship guidance component, it's like you could easily stray away and then the rankings could be bad. So all in all, like when it comes to rankings specifically, we are really looking at how can we ensure moving forward that there's going to be a change to happen. We're still figuring it out, but like how it doesn't hurt kids. Mm-hmm. Right. And maybe the discussion we've had is like, maybe rankings are no longer public. They're behind the scenes for college programs. And that way it doesn't affect the kid that's a ninth grader or a 10th grader. Because at the end of the day, that double-edged sword is exposure, but it's also the other side is development, meaning like, hey,
where's still the guys in the
what's
other.
What's the potential going to be? Like, listen, I get that. See, I'm one of those kids that if you ranked me high, oh my God, that would be like the worst thing ever, because then I would just
feel like you made it.
The opposite. I would be like, I need to keep going. I can't lose this ranking. I can't drop. Yeah. I got it. Right? Like, it would be the worst thing in my life if I was to be psychologically ranked high and then have anything happen that would drop me. But I come so I don't even think about it, but I completely get that if somebody's ranked high, that's when they relax. They'll just relax a little.
And we've heard from the people. Like, we've always, this North Pole Hoops has always been about listening to the community. What do the people want, and how do we evolve based on what the people want? And so, like, there's like, it's like 50-50 almost. That's why it's difficult, because on one side we're giving the exposure, but the other side we have to tell them keep working hard. But then they're looking at the rankings and they're like, in some cases, I know not all people think the same, but some cases they felt like they made it. We've had kids that are in college right now that we're now mentoring, that are NBA prospects, and they were on the draft boards in the beginning of the year and they're no longer there. And then they've built this, it's a self-evaluation that isn't there, right? Like, they're living in la la land. Hey, you don't make, it's not about making the league, first of all. It's about staying in the league and pursuing an all-star, pursuing Hall of Fame. That's the difference between RJ Barrett, Tristan Thompson, the guys that are actually have had long-term NBA careers versus the guys that made it and then boogied out. Because every year there's a new class of guys.
But that self-evaluation piece might be something that could fix your ranking status. Because again, if I was somebody who was ranked low, there are certain students or certain kids who that would be, okay, well, this is where I'm at, and I'm not going to have that drive, or I'm not going to be able to get more. If you rank me low on something that I feel confident I'm good at, I'm going to prove you wrong. I'm going to keep on going. But to have the kids be, so like the whole.
But there's a level of entitlement though that is built from not just the players, but it leaks into the people that are involved with, whether it's the club organization or even the parents.
That system has been around in the U.S. for as long as we can, you know, remember. Mm. So there's obviously more good to come from it than bad, I would say.
Interesting. Well, okay.
And I also just wonder if there's a way to involve each kids individually. So you have like this grand generalized ranking, you have the system that's ranked them, but is there a way that you can individualize programs for these kids to not, you know, you can see where you are, but use it to the advantage of motivating them to do better, right? Like, don't take for granted because you're in the top 10 of this ranking that's it, you can sit back. Like, how do you work directly with that player to make sure that high ranking doesn't motivate them or doesn't stop motivating them the same way that if I'm ranked in the bottom, that I'm not going to think, oh, what am I bothering for? Like, I work my ass off and look at where I'm ranked at across the country. Like, I wonder if there's a way that you can involve each of the players individually through that process.
So yeah, the idea that we've kind of flirted with is more trying to, instead of ranking, like number ranking, to kind of transition it into more of a star system, 5-star, 4-star, 3-star, or flag. We look at the flag leaf system, 5-leaf, 4-leaf, 3-leaf, because, you know, a 5-star can be ranked number 1 or number 10.
Right.
But there's multiple five stars.
It's like a legend. It's a legend, right? Like, a 5-star is an NBA high major. A 4-star is a, you know, mid major. But low to mid major D1 ball is equivalent to high U sport and high D2. But most people don't know that. So like when we, it's about educating, but then breaking it down to the micro of, you know, a 4-star and a three star is like a mid to high end U sport CCAA guy. So that's what we've been working on a little bit more. That way it's not pigeonholing anybody and it's giving them that range. It's a lot more broad because these kids and these parents and these clubs, they take the rankings literally, right?
Of course, like, we all do.
14, but 14 and 13 are the same level, you know, or
I hear
15
you.
And 30.
It doesn't matter when you're 14, when you're the
number 14. I know. That's the tough part.
You're Middle Eastern, you know. I get passionate about this. It's like, don't tell me that I can't do something, man, because I'm just going to prove you wrong. I'm too stubborn. I'm too stubborn not to prove you wrong.
So moving along, I just kind of want to move forward to, you know, everything you guys have done has been in partnership to grow the game. And what you've done has been very successful. You've educated and you've provided awareness. So if you're, if we're giving some advice out there to whether it's a young kid coming up or maybe it's parents, you want your child to be, you recognize your child has talent. You want them to play at a high level. You're an up and coming young player in, you know, grade 9, 10. You see the kids that are coming before you. What advice do you give them and what do you suggest the pathway for them is?
I'll start with kind of like, what do I suggest? I think it's something that's critical for families is building a game plan, right? Not something that is like, if you're an eighth grader, for instance, you know, you should have at least a 4-year game plan, like throughout your high school.
You know, when we're that age, we don't have any of that plan. We don't have the foresight. We're young. So at what point are the parents being too pushy? And at what point are the parents like, you know, if you're sitting down with your child who's in grade eight, how serious is that grade eight taking the conversation?
Oh, well, I mean, where the kids are is, what is your goal? John, what's your goal? You know, is it it's the NBA? Is it scholarship?
That conversation is always being around education. But if you have that conversation around sports, it's probably going to be taken a lot differently.
I actually think that the kids would take it more seriously if it was a 4-year plan around sports as opposed to a 4-year plan around education.
Damn right.
Well, there's an education component to it as well, right?
Of course. But I think what Kurt means is that if I'm talking to a grade eight about what's your career going to be when you grow up, because we need to pick high school courses that are going to not make
not
sure
take,
that
never take
that, that anything is closed off to you for university, because, you know, grade 9 courses feed on grade 10 courses, and then that feeds on to grade 12 courses, and that feeds on to university requirements. He or she was asleep 5 minutes ago before I started talking. But if we're talking about a 4-year plan when it comes to potentially a path to the NBA or professional sports, I think that's an easier conversation to have with a kid in grade eight. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it depends on the kid.
Well, I mean, the parents aren't going to have all the answers, but the key is that they provide the initial step of, okay, like understanding what that goal is. And then, you know, from our side, like we help with this aspect. We provide consultation to help them build that plan. And now, of course, every kid is different, right? Like there's the top 10 kid, or the like 6'4" eighth grader, and then there's the 5 foot 5'6" grader or whatever it is. That there's different, like, we got to be honest though, right? We're gonna give them our professional opinion on, okay, where are you at? If you're here, then what do you need to do to get to the next level? Like the NBA, everyone wants to make the NBA, you know, that's the end game for everybody, but like there are micro, that's the macro goal, right? But then there are micro goals that you got to hit first before you get there. But knowing those and understanding those micro goals, that's what I think a lot of kids, a lot of families miss. It's like, you got to, before you get to Z, you got to go A,
you gotta
B,
make
C,
the
D,
high school
F, G,
team
all,
first.
Every part of the alphabet. Right. Absolutely, right? And then as you hit those, each micro goal, very small percentage are fortunate enough to get to the league. But even if you don't get to the league, it's about developing professionals and whatever, whether you're a professional plumber, or you're a professional construction worker, or a lawyer, or a marketer, or a, whatever it is that you do, just try to be excellent in what you do. Because a lot of guys that are falling, quote unquote, short of making the NBA can still have successful careers in anything that they desire. You know, I didn't make the NBA, but I decided to put, you know, I'm a 5'8", 5'9" point guard at the end of the day. So what can I do to be great at what I do, right? And that's the whole idea of what we're trying to share with young people and old people.
Anyway, this has been a really enlightening conversation. It's been a lot of fun. And we like to end things off with a bit more fun. So I'm going to ask you 3 questions. And I don't want you to think too hard about it, but no, they're easy. Well, maybe they might be hard, but they're fun. So they're fun. So the first one is, if you were to write your autobiography today, what would the title of it be?
Chasing Championships.
Oh, that's good.
That's his mantra. It's so easy.
And if there was a movie made about your life, who would play you?
Oh, wow. Jeez. Who would play me? Existing celebrity?
It could be an existing actor. It could be an actor from a long time ago. Like, this is
yeah. Maybe Will Smith.
Will Smith, good call. And the last question is, what TV show of now or past is most like your life?
This is going to be funny. I go to Dragon Ball Z. And that's mostly because I'm big on energy. Okay. And developing great energy. And there's a lot of parallels. It was one of my childhood favorites.
I like that. Wow. You got Chasing Championships, Will Smith, and Dragon Ball Z. Well,
it was a variety, right?
I love it. I was not thinking Dragon Ball Z for the TV question. That was amazing.
So, Tariq, before we wrap up, is there anything you want to leave us with?
I appreciate you guys having me on. Keep up the great work over there, and appreciate it. No, I appreciate the time and appreciate being able to, I don't often get a chance to kind of tackle these different, topics in the public forum. So it's really neat to kind of share perspectives and have that dialogue, because, for the people that hear it, that hear the podcast, I hope they take away something from it that can translate into something fruitful and productive.
Exactly. And we thank you, man. What you guys are doing for youth in this country is very, very important. You know, you guys are paving the way for those to come. And, I'm extremely, extremely grateful to see the work that you guys have started, and now all of the people that are part of this journey. And we're all in it together, because we're all growing the game.
Absolutely.
Where can we find you guys online? So if anyone wants to follow you guys, what are the handles?
Yeah, North Pole Hoops, on all the social media platforms, one word. And then my account's Tariq_MPH, website's northpolehoops.com. And I can kind of lead you to the different areas.
Perfect. We appreciate you, brother.